All right, so I'd like to welcome everybody here to Ashland. Yeah, it's a great day to be out here on Martin Luther King's birthday, working to continue to fight a war on poverty. And, I'd like to say, I'm a city councilor here in Ashland, and I would like to say that we've done an incredible amount to deal with homeless issues, but I really can't say that, unfortunately. And it's great to see a lot of people coming out for this event, and let's hope that we can put a lot of pressure in this next year on our city council. And it is up to you as citizens to put the pressure on us and make us take some action, because we really need to do something in our community. So I'm going to give the floor to Peter Buckley. He's our state representative. And Peter, actually, I look out my window, I don't know, maybe once a week or so. I'll look out there and I'll see Peter walking his dog up my street. And it's great to have a state representative you actually see walking around the street. So let's all welcome Peter Buckley.
All right. Thank you. Great to see everybody out here on a wet, cold Monday night. And it's in the spirit of Martin Luther King that we're gathered around the country to try to get things done. I went to an event today for Thrive, which is a great local organization that's doing a lot of work in terms of local production of produce and vegetables and food products, and making sure that the crops that are not used directly by restaurants and markets get to food banks, etc. I was telling my youngest kid where I was going. He's 11 years old. And so I'm going to talk to these people that have this organization that has to do with food, getting food, local food to people, and particularly people who to the food banks, so no one goes hungry. And he turned around to me and he said, "Dad, how can anybody go hungry in the United States of America?" And boy, that is a question from an 11-year-old. And the only answer I could give him was, because we don't have the political will to change that. And how can anybody go without a home in the United States of America who wants a home? It's because we don't have the political will to change that. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, in his last State of the Union address, it's a little bit of a historical story here. He was too sick to go to the Capitol, to Congress, to give his last State of the Union address. So he gave it by radio. And what he talked about in his last State of the Union address was the Second Bill of Rights. And if you ever want to look this up and take a look at it and read it, what FDR was talking about, that every American has a right to health care. Every American has a right. Every American has a right to a clean home. Every American has a right to food and sustenance. Every American has a right. We are one of the wealthiest nations in the world. The only reason, the thing I said at the start, the only reason why we don't have it, because we have not developed the political will. What I would love to see in the state of Oregon and in the United States of America is where's West? Where's West Brain?
Right here.
West should be cloned. We should have like about 10,000 West Brains in the state of Oregon, because if there were 10,000 West Brains, then the legislature would have no choice but to focus on affordable housing and on justice for workers. Because he is active to that level, and that's what it takes. You're all here tonight. I'm preaching to the choir to a certain extent, because you're all here tonight because you're willing to be active. But we have not got to the point of leverage that we need to get to actually force an agenda that is citizen-centered, that is human-centered, either in the state or in the country as a whole. And that takes each one of you. I'm going to ask you one question. How many of you here have already voted in the election for January 26th? Okay. How many of you here have a ballot but haven't voted yet? Okay. Again, this is why we can't make the progress we need to. You must vote. You must get that ballot in. And we must pass Measure 66 and 67 to have even a chance of having decent programs for the people of the state of Oregon. It's absolutely essential. It's not rocket science. I did an event for Planned Parenthood last Saturday night, and you could point to Planned Parenthood getting organized, getting their structure together, joining coalitions, and getting legislation passed. That's how it works. So if you're absolutely determined to do something about homelessness in the state of Oregon, you organize, He joined coalitions, he put pressure on people like me, he put legislation through, and he pushed, and he pushed, and he pushed to get done. It's not rocket science, it's organization. That's what it is. Right. So thank you for being here tonight. Thanks for being willing to talk about organization and get organized. And let's make a difference in 2010. Let's have a human Oregon and a human United States of America. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for those inspirational words. And also, I just want to mention, with 66 and 67, there is a petition going around that's going out to U.S. Bank. And U.S. Bank is working to fight against passing Measure 66 and 67. And we're actually having a protest tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock in front of our U.S. Bank. But if you could take the time to sign the petition, they're in the back of the room, and they should be getting passed around.
Yes,
so I appreciate if we could get everyone's signature. No.
No, you do not. Write legibly. That's correct. So that we can read your first name. Don't sign it. Do a signature. Just put it in, what do they call it? Regular.
Print.
Thank you.
All right. So now I'm going to turn the floor over to Pam Babin. Here she is, right here. And Pam's one of our local organizers and does lots of work in the community. But she's going to be moderating the forums. And
job, as Eric said, of giving us the inspiration that we need and some of the tools at the state level that we need to work with. I feel very honored to be here tonight to welcome our visitors from Portland and to thank everyone in our local community for coming out tonight in such a blistery, stormy weather. We have a rather distinguished set of panelists tonight, and some of you may know them all, some of you may know only a few, but I'm going to give you just a one-word introduction, or one-sentence introduction to each. First of all, I'd like to introduce Connie Saldana. Connie wears many, many hats in our community, but she's here tonight representing the Jackson County Homeless Task Force. She's been working on homeless issues since 1988. That's 22 years.
Wow.
The other panelist from our community is Rich Rohde. And Rich Rohde is he's the regional organizer for an organization here in the Rogue Valley called Oregon Action. He's a longtime community organizer and activist. Most of you probably know him. And when I asked him, how long have you been working on homeless issues, he said, I'm embarrassed to say it, but it's been 20 years, and it seems so feeble to be saying that. And we had a moment's discussion about how, I think that's how we all feel. People have been working on homeless issues for hundreds of years. And so I don't think it's anything to be embarrassed about to say that we've been working on it for 20 years, because it just takes all of us to be doing that work. So thank you for being with us, Rich. We have two guests with us from Portland. One is Brendan Phillips, and he's with Sisters of the Road. And he explained to me, as some of you may realize, that Sisters of the Road has been working in advocacy for homeless issues for 30 years in Portland. And the project that he and others are here helping us to understand is called the Western Regional Advocacy Project, RAP. And that's been going on for 2 years. So we'll be hearing more about him about that. So thank you for being with us, Brendan. And then finally, we have Ellis Ackwell, who is a community, I'm sorry?
No, close enough.
Oh, what is Ellis Ackwell, sorry, thank you. And Ellis is a community organizer from Portland, and together with Brendan and the 50 people who are here visiting us, this Western Regional Advocacy Project is a coalition of organizations all along the West Coast, from LA to Seattle.
Woo!
is the grassroots movements that's concentrating on the need for affordable housing and bringing it closer to our into people's radar and on our minds so that we can finally do something about this. Thank you so much for being here, all of you.
Hi. Again, I'll say welcome to Ashland, welcome to Southern Oregon. We're so pleased that you're here. I'm going to talk a little bit about homelessness in Southern Oregon, and specifically in Jackson County. I'm on the Homeless Task Force, which is a coalition of all of the agencies that provide services and supported housing to people who are homeless in our area. One of the things that the Homeless Task Force does is to do an annual count of homeless people in our area. Last January, we counted 899 homeless individuals. We're about to have this count again next month. We do it the last week of January. Last year, 82% of the people who were homeless were single adults, and 18% were either families or teens. Now, our numbers do not reflect actually the high number of homeless teens. We discovered that Jackson County is second only to Multnomah County in numbers, actual hard numbers of teens who are either on the street or couch surfing or another form of homelessness. We also have a high number of veterans in our area because of the proximity of the VA Southern Oregon Regional Centers and Clinics, which is out in White City. We have a range of services just like every community does, from food all the way up through shelter, transitional shelter, permanent supportive housing, and then affordable housing. And we work to make the system strong, but there are still gaps all along the way. One of the major gaps we have in our area is we don't have any specific sheltering for homeless women with mental illness. And they very often become victims when they're on the street. One of the things we've been working for years, have not had a speck of success at creating, is a homeless campground. Because the another trouble that we have in our area is we have a men's shelter and a women's shelter. Both are church-oriented. People can be in those shelters, well, at least in the men's shelter, for 10 days and a month. And then they're back out on the street again. So we have a lot of people who cycle through that shelter really quickly, and some who don't want to go because they don't want to get the religious message. And just 2 months ago, we actually had a real cold snap, and a homeless man died down near the river because he wasn't in the shelter, okay? And he didn't have enough blankets to take care of him where he was. Another thing that we could do with a little more around here is actual street outreach. We have a lot of agencies that serve the homeless, but hardly anybody has the resources to actually send people out to where the homeless live on the street. One of the ironic things about our government is in the very moment that they were causing changes in the system that reduced Section 8 vouchers, they were declaring that every community had to have a plan to end homelessness in 10 years. So in our area, the Jackson County Homeless Task Force worked with the county and United Way to create a 10-year plan to end homelessness. Well, we have to create that plan if we want to receive HUD funding and the other money that we need to provide the services, so we did. Here are our 6 goals. Increase stock of permanent, affordable, and supportive housing for individuals and families who earn less than or equal to 30% of the area median income. Increase agency coordination, provide case management to help people maintain stable rental housing before they become homeless. Provide financial assistance and life skills training to help people move into stable housing. Develop and increase sustainable housing along the full continuum. And develop an ongoing community campaign to educate the citizens about the issues of homelessness and just to raise the awareness of the community.
Connie, before we go any further, it's really hard for those of us who gathered to hear your message to hear it about this far back because there's a lot of noise in the back. So maybe you could ask for a little more quiet so that we can really hear what you all are saying.
Okay, thank you. Would people just be considerate and take your talking outside, and that way people that want to listen can stay on the inside, okay? I'm going to just quickly end by the fact that last Friday, the Department of Human Services in Oregon released its most recent report on the state of things, and they say it's not going to be until January of 2011 before we're going to see a peak in the increase in the amount of services that are needed. And that's across the board. Food stamps, TANF, long-term care services, people enrolled in the Oregon Health Plan, the increase in the number of uninsured, and increased need for substance abuse and mental health treatment. Basically, those needs are increasing because the number of services are decreasing. So I'm going to leave my conversation about specifics and pass it over to Rich, who's going to talk about issues.
Thank you all for being here. It's great to see such a turnout, and it's great to be part, I think, really for the first time in my mind, of both people from the North and the South coming together and how, you know, we really have a chance to build some power if we build the North and the South. I'm with Oregon Action. We're an organizing organization that brings people together to fight for basic, fundamental, root cause issues. So we work on things like getting health care for all, getting a living wage. We passed a living wage ordinance here in Ashland. And we've been working, you know, living in Southern Oregon, we've been working on affordable housing and homelessness for a long time. And one of the things that we, in doing that, is we want to look at sort of the fundamental root causes, the structural issues about housing. So that, you know, sometimes in working on homeless issues, people say, well, what we really need to do is fix people. We also need to look at how we fix the structures in our community and the political system that we work on. So one of the things that I brought was a visual aid, but I just want to, this came from Right, and we've had it on our office for a couple of years, and it's a very simple visual aid. And this is the federal funding for affordable housing starting in 1977 up through the first part of, so that this is up through 2003. So this is in the Bush, Reagan years, and you can look and see the dramatic cutback in affordable housing that we've had over that time. So we can talk about what are the problems that homeless people have, but we have a dramatic problem right there structurally in terms of how much affordable housing. And so I know one of the reasons that we're here tonight is to talk about, and we're gonna hear from the folks from RAP about how do we begin to solve that issue on a national basis. Here in Southern Oregon, Oregon Action got, because I want to highlight one issue that reflects affordable housing. One of the issues that we got involved in was the closures of mobile parks. The mobile parks represent a huge part of the affordable housing in our valley. And so we've actually organized four mobile parks that have been closed essentially because they become more valuable for development than they are as affordable housing communities. And over that time, we've been able to make some decent changes in the state law about how they pay for relocation and those kinds of issues. And I say that because housing preservation, I want to put on as an affordable housing issue. You know, we need to be able to, let me just kind of highlight that. You know, we have great programs here in the Valley locally that are trying to build creative, affordable housing for people. And when some of those programs can do 10, you know, Habitat builds 2, 3, 4 houses, When we can do that, we feel like we put a lot of effort into it. In just one mobile park closure, we lose 50 units of housing in just one time that we do that. So we got to recognize that as we're building housing, as we're looking for those projects that are going to address that, we have to make sure that we're keeping the stock of affordable housing that we have. Much of the housing that's built with federal funds allows the owners to go back onto and put it under the private market after a certain amount of years. So we need to be able to address that. Let me say that finally, just and then I'm going to turn it over to my friends from RAP. But the things that Peter Buckley and we've all said is the key to this is building coalitions. We need to build a coalition here in Jackson County that includes the social service agencies, it includes the community organizations like Oregon Action, and it includes the churches. All of those have to be part of that. And then we have to be in a coalition on a statewide level with groups from Portland, like the Housing Alliance, and then working nationally to be able to address all these issues. I could just go on, but I'm gonna stop and say, one of the ways that we can work together is for a housing trust funds, pools of money that can be used for creating projects. So nationally, there's a bill that's moving forward, a national housing trust fund. In Oregon, we had a big win in the last legislature because we all went together in the Housing Alliance and passed the document recording fee towards building a $100 million housing trust fund in Oregon. And the plan is to dedicate a good percentage of that to homeless, creating projects that will help the homeless issues. And then finally, I'll say right here locally in Ashland, we have a housing trust fund in our budget, but we don't have any money. So we have an opportunity, all of us here tonight, to work together, to build coalitions, to take action on the structural causes that we need to change, and I'm proud to be part of y'all doing that.
So, I can try to talk. Is that louder now? All right. Yeah, all of our voices together can overpower other voices, hopefully. I'm here from Portland, Oregon. I'm part of Sisters of the Road, and as the announcer said, Portland, Oregon, Sisters of the Road has been working on issues related to homelessness for 30 years. And we've led a lot of different fights and a lot of different actions throughout the years. And I've only been here for, 8 months. I've only been a part of Sisters for about 8 months now. But I've learned that all the people in the community are just amazing folks. Is it appropriate for me to maybe hold off a second and see if we can get the situation resolved outside, and then we can. Do people mind if we do that? Sorry, it was just really distracting, and I had a hard time concentrating on. Okay.
Sorry. Go ahead, Brittany. We're with you now.
All right. So I just wanted to take a second to introduce Ellis Eckwell. He's going to read a speech he's prepared to deliver in San Francisco in front of the hopefully thousands, and we're definitely, we actually set our target for 1 million people. and we're going to get there. So, without further ado, I'll let you all hear Ellis's words. This is the second time Ellis has given this speech, and he's using this opportunity to deliver the speech to you folks. So give him a round of applause.
A million people? I don't think so. Anyways, on to my speech. My name is Ellis Eggwald, and I am representing Sisters of the Road Civic Action Group from Portland, Oregon. As one of the new faces of those deprived of housing, I have come to realize that it doesn't matter how educated, smart, intelligent you are. The truth is many Americans are just one or two paychecks away from experiencing homelessness themselves. We cannot and should not expect the government to do things for us unless we organize ourselves and demand what is right. What we know is right is that affordable housing and keeping people in housing is the best solution to ending homelessness. We must demand that the federal government fund and build affordable housing so that no one who wants a home is without one. This means restoring funding levels to 1978, adjusted for inflation, that adequately address the situation on the ground. There are more of us now on the streets than ever before. We must also demand that our government recognize that having a home is simply a human right. We must band together to start. We must band together to start changing the attitudes of our fellow housed citizens, to battle the stereotypes and misinformation spread about those who are deprived of housing due to circumstances beyond our control. We represent the disease of a system that ties our housing status to our civil rights and that hold individuals responsible for failure of the system. We must show them and convince them that this disease is not contagious and not something we bring to our community, but something that exists as a result of failed policies and misguided assumptions and failure of the system. Think about the reason why people become homeless. For example, as a person currently living with the AIDS virus, I cannot afford the cost of my housing, and affordable housing is not available for me. Others are physically and mentally disabled. Still others are fleeing abuse. We must also start working to stop police oppression of those experiencing homelessness and that goes on every day. We must challenge laws being passed daily that make it illegal to be without housing in America. We must stand up and challenge local governments whose policies and laws only help to ensure that the cycle of homelessness continues. This is a grassroots movement, and through grassroots movements, laws have been changed and rights have been won. Like the civil rights movement of the 50s and 60s, which started with a few committed community leaders, inspired by the voice and wisdom of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., this movement will grow. The civil rights movement spread throughout the country, and it is said loudly, everyone in the country is treated equal, and we have the same rights. Quoting Dr. King, I have a dream that someday there will be no man, woman, or child, or any other American who chooses not to live on the streets of America will have to do so. If we return back to our respective communities and start peaceful movements in Dr. King's honor to end the isolation of poverty and homelessness, there is no reason why this dream can't come true. So let us go out there. So let us go out there and make things happen and create real change as Americans. Change starts with each of us. My name is Ellis Eggwald, and I thank you for your time.
To talk a little bit about the Western Regional Advocacy Project. I know there's probably some people who want to know a little bit more about what that is. The first I can tell you is that it's a movement that is based up and down the West Coast, and the idea is that we know we need to start something regional and take it national. And it's all of our organizations combined. It takes more resources, it takes more building, more time, you know, I'm always brought back to, you know, the civil rights movement. You know, it started in the 50s, but it really didn't pick up its steam until the 60s, and it took that time to train the leaders, to get the people who are experiencing the oppressions, experiencing the hardship, to come up and stand up, tell their stories, and share it with everyone. So I think it's really important to recognize that this is a movement that's going to take some time. It's obvious, right? Everything takes a little time. But we're here because we're willing to put our, to begin to commit our organizations and commit this coalition to doing what it needs to do. And what it needs to do is expose the fact that affordable housing is at the cornerstone of the epidemic in homelessness as we know now. It really goes back in the Without Housing report that this poster comes from, came directly from RAP, and you can find that at www.raphome.org, and RAP spelled W-A-W-R-A-P. You can go to that website and download a copy of the Without Housing report, and it shows very clearly that there's a correlation between the slashing of funding in the early 80s and the subsequent rise in homelessness throughout the country. So there is no doubt, this report details in very clearly that it, that there are causal relationship between the two. So affordable housing, I had a reporter ask me, you know, so what do you want local governments to do, you know, affordable housing? Well, it's important that affordable housing start grassroots. We need to force and show the federal government that it's made a grave error in slashing the funding of affordable housing, and we need that funding back. And so we're going to go to San Francisco as a coalition of as a community from Portland, and we're going to join our partners from up and down the West Coast, and we're going to march on the federal building, and we are going to demand on the anniversary of Obama's inauguration that we start looking at affordable housing and making it a priority of his administration.
Yeah.
So, I think that one of the stories that I learned by being involved with RAP was, and I think it's a really good story, is that on the eve of the Voting Rights Act in 1965, all the civil rights leaders met with Lyndon Johnson, and they said it's a moral imperative that you pass this law, that you sign this into law. And Lyndon Johnson said that he needed them to go out into the communities, organize their communities, so that he had no other choice. And it's not that he didn't support the Voting Rights Act, it was that he knew that to get it through Congress, to get it where it needed to be, he needed the support, he needed to show that there was overwhelming community support, which there was. So they went back and they did that, and we got the Voting Rights Act. So I think it's important to recognize that we have someone. I think that if you sat with Obama right now and said affordable housing needs to be the number one priority, he would say similar, that we need to go back to our communities and we need to recognize that we need to organize ourselves and we need to move this ball forward. And I think, you know, there's a dream out there, the inauguration of Obama wasn't the change. The change is that we need to organize, and we need to get out there, and we need to make our voices heard. And without that, he's just a figurehead. We need to have real change, substantive change, organized change in our communities, or else we're not going to get that ball moving forward through the halls of Congress or anywhere else in political seats of power. So that's really, really important to remember. I don't want to take up too much time talking. I have a community member. Her name is Brooklyn. She'd like to read a poem to you. And then I think what we should do is just take a, and we'll go into a question and answer session. We can have some folks ask some questions of us. If you need me to spell out a little more how to get involved with RAP, if you want to know about more about Sisters of the Road, whatever, you can ask those questions. And then we'll break for a short intermission, and then we'll have some music. So without further ado, let me get Brooklyn up here to read a poem that she wrote.
Thank you. Once upon a time, not
louder.
Okay, some of that. Once upon a time, not too long ago, in a place not far away from home, and air where nothing and no one would stop to point then stare without their cares about yesterday or today. Do you yet realize that I'm here to help, to do what I can, or are you stuck in quicksand? Would you know if you had forgotten what our future holds, that the chalice wasn't created to hoard gold? Should our world come up with one just cause, yes we can. We could, those flashes hurt my eyes. Please. Okay, and that, there was no disguise. We could all come together in a peaceful place, still marching tall, never again losing our face or being by believing we were too small. Never again forgetting our future. One called me mom. Knowing we have homes forever with our always unseen, stable, and strong shadows as one still walking. Walking tall, some way, on some day. I can't bring my writing. It will be us all together, living happily ever after. That is not all. I still think you're the best, Mr. President, of my lifetime, Mr. Obama. Please be able to call. Answer our call, please. I am with Shannon Renee Rhodes, 503 USA 2 DAY. Thank you for your time. That's all.
I think we should just open up to some questions. If you have questions for the panel, we'd love to hear them. Do we have our moderator that wanted to maybe hold the microphone for people? Is she still here? Maybe not.
I have a microphone.
Okay. Okay. So is there some questions that people would like to ask?
We have Eric.
Okay,
good.
Or do you want to?
I don't need a mic.
And here, we actually have two.
How do you
mics.
Join rap?
We're working on that. No, as an organization that is rooted in its membership, we're the executive director part that, you know, getting the hiring of an executive director is really going to solidify how we go ahead and start enlisting and getting new members. One of the big things for RAP right now was we all decided that we needed to have, it was 2 years in the making, we got the report out, that was a big step. We started building the regional support and getting the members so that we had representation from up and down the West Coast. And now we needed to come out with an action that said, here we are. And so that's what this San Francisco trip is. And so when we get back from San Francisco, the discussion is going to shift to, all right, here we are, how do we grow? And I think this is part of that growth. This going out to San Francisco, meeting with all of our partners is part of that growth. But the next step is to really get into like a really good process on how we're going to start recruiting new members and what sort of, you know, system we're going to use to do that. I would say the best way to know and to learn more about becoming a part of RAP is to go to the website, which is www.raphome.org.
Thank you.
Thank you.
take time to create low-income housing and shelters and resources to help homeless people. But what we need now, would y'all do something for the immediate need, like coming up with legal campsite? Because like the man said, that people are dying outside because it's cold. When I left for Chicago in November, before I came back this month, 7 women that lived on the street have been raped and was nothing done about it. So people need immediate need and shelter now. Do you think that you all can work on something that until you can get affordable housing?
Yesterday when I came down, one of my homeless friends said, I asked him, what should I bring up? And he said, the first thing I want brought up is homeless camping. And we know it's an issue in our community. There was an effort a few years ago that where people came together and designed what a homeless camp could really be and how it would work, and the design of it, and put it all together, and we're ready to go. Could not find the land. The zoning and the land has been a difficulty, but it is a issue that would provide some good solutions quickly if we can figure out a way to do it. I would just add, my word would be from Senator Paul Wellstone that Peter Buckley said, organize, organize, organize. That's what we have to do on a local basis to be able to build a camp that would be a start here in Jackson County.
I have a comment on that. I know in Portland we have illegal camping ordinance, which is strictly enforced, or it's eradicated forest, I should say. When we get back from our RAP trip in San Francisco, our plan is to come up with addressing that and attacking City Hall on that. A solution that I'm going to propose is that if the city's not willing to completely repeal the camping ordinance, that we create camping zones like you were talking about, where we make a proposal to the city as a compromise, and if the city comes back and rejects the compromise or refuses to cooperate, then we've got leverage basically in the press and some other words where we can have a get-in-your-face attitude with the city council, because that seems to be the problem is nobody has a get-in-your-face attitude. The door closes, everybody kind of walks away and goes, oh, well, we'll go back and regroup. When the only way change is going to be done is if we get city officials out of our faces, or state politicians, or even federal politicians, and say, you will listen to us. These are demands we want, and these are human rights we want. We don't want special rights, we want our human rights. So that's I was talking to somebody at Sisters who says that I get the luxury of writing up this proposal when I get back. So, another thing I get to do, obviously, but that's fine. I mean, I think that, you know, like I said, if we propose it to the city rejects it, then we can go to the press and say, look, we're trying to come up with a solution to get people off the streets and to safe areas. The city's saying, no, we're not working with us, and that's going to throw that back at the city about what are you going to do now? That's my comments.
I'll just quickly say that, you know, I know Ibrahim and I and a number of people in this room were a part of a process that the city coined the alternatives process, and it was the idea being that we would come up with a 10-minute plan, and the 10-minute plan would help address some of these things. And the number four things that the 10-minute plan, the four top ones, one of them was establishing guidelines for safe camping in the city, and the Coordinating Committee in Homelessness, which is the same as the task force here that administers the 10-year plan, supported that. And through them, we got the support of a commissioner, Nick Fish, and he came out and said he would support something like that. And now it's gone. It's not there. I don't know what's happened to it. I know that there was a settlement for the anti-camping ordinance on the city level, and there was a lawsuit built around the anti-camping ordinance, and the city is now settling. So that was sort of like the reason why they told us they stalled on it, was they needed to wait for the settlement. But in Portland, if there's anything we know, it's that this happens time and time again. The city comes up with plans, the city says it's going to do something, and it doesn't do what it says it's going to do. So you know, here we are on Martin Luther King's Day. What do we want to say? Well, I mean, what Ellis just said, which is, you know, nonviolent direct action is the next step. Nonviolent direct action. If we can plop down, show them that we can do it, and then it becomes really hard for them to get rid of you because it doesn't look too good. When they're taking a bunch of people who are voluntarily living and establishing rules for themselves to live by and being peaceful neighbors, then we can move that ball forward. So I don't know what the next step is, and I'm going to take the lead from people like Ellis and others in the community who know best what the next step is, and people like Ibrahim and others. So when they tell us what they want to do, we're gonna organize and do it. I would also just say one last little piece, which is in Seattle, Washington, they passed an affordable housing levy. And I think that that's politically one of the next steps that I think all of us can agree on that we can work for, which is either a statewide affordable housing levy or a regional, local affordable housing levy that would be set aside for affordable housing. And so I know that doesn't go to the 10-minute issue here, but just in terms of what we need to do and pass in the ballot boxes these coming years, affordable housing levies would be a good one.
Just one more thing. So if it's safe to say, that's what you're saying, that we should do what the three other guys and I did when we created Digby Village, to go out and take the land and then live on there?
And yes.
I think that I'm going to defer to you, Ibrahim, on that. You know the answer to that question better than I know the answer to that question. So,
In terms of Portland, you mentioned Nick Fish apparently not implementing that particular proposal. And in terms of direct action, I'm not aware, but perhaps the Portland people are. It looks like locally there's a picket on 66 and 67 tomorrow on U.S. Bank. There is a rather large building in U.S. Bank in Portland. So I guess I'm asking a couple questions. Is Sisters of the Road, or street groups, or affiliated groups, willing or planning on doing a picket at U.S. Bank in Portland about their opposition to 66 and 67? And secondly, with Nick Fish, with respect to city council, both for camping and for low-income housing, there is a candidate, Jason Barber, who's running against Nick Fish. And would Sisters, street groups, and allied groups, based on Nick Fish's behavior, support Jason Barber for city council? And the election's in May, as you know.
Well, I can say two things on that. One is, the first question, I didn't know the piece about U.S. Bank. And so one of the great things about doing this organizing in the communities is you learn things. Every single time you make a call to a community organizer, every single time you make a call to an organization, you will learn something about what's going on the ground. And so when we put this together, and I heard very late in the game that Jobs with Justice and some of the other folks were going to be doing a rally at U.S. Bank on 66 and 67 and U.S. Bank's position on that, that was a key that, you know, we're all starting to work together and hear the same stories. So that's something we haven't talked about, Lee, to answer your question. We haven't talked about how we would do something around at U.S. Bank in 66 and 67. But the second one, your question about Nick Fish and supportive candidates, it's hard for us to say because Sisters of the Road is a nonprofit. We can't come out and support candidates or lobby for candidates or do work for candidates because of the constraints of that. We can do limited things. So I guess it would be something we'd have to talk about as an organization. I mean, it's a lot of people working at Sisters, so we need to make sure everyone's on the same page.
Does CAG have that same constraint, CAG?
CAG, as an arm of Sisters, as an organizing body of Sisters, yes, it does. I mean, we're part of Sisters of the Road, so yeah. But there is stuff we can do. So, I mean, issue-based stuff, you know, that's something we can do. So if the candidate has an align with these issues, then we can go and take some of those issues and start working on those issues, educating people about them, and by that, you know, relationship, we would be supporting the candidate. So that's the best I can tell you there. Wes?
Brandon, I'd like to, and for the folks from Portland, I'd like to talk for just a minute about panhandling and let you know something that's going on here in our area you may be interested in. We have a very, very strong chapter. ACLU. We really, really do. And the ACLU has taken on an issue about panhandling, particularly in the city of Medford, people standing on the corners. This issue has gone through some steps. It's now being appealed, and it's a very important issue, very close to the issues that we're talking about here, the civil rights of it. Maybe you might want to comment about those civil rights, but I want the Portland folks to know that panhandling issue is being worked on down here. It's very important for all of us all around the state. And by the way, thumbs up to the ACLU, because we have a strong chapter here. And being an activist, because you know it can be scary sometimes, having a strong ACLU, they got your back, that kind of a thing, is so cool. So that's a shout out for ACLU. But talk a little bit more about the civil rights issues and maybe even panhandling, if you have a comment on that, please.
As regarding the civil rights issue, it comes down to one simple thing. Having a safe home to live in is a civil right. It's not a privilege. It's not a request. It's guaranteed. We've been told as Americans, we are guaranteed a safe place to live. We're guaranteed medical care. Granted, Obama's in the process of making it where most Americans are covered, but that may be in jeopardy now because of a Senate race coming up for the late Senator Kennedy. It all comes down to, being able to exist without being thrown in jail is a civil right. Cities are passing laws that say they're going to be homeless. Boise has a law that aggressive panhandling they like to use, which you can go to jail for up to a year of aggressive panhandling. The police, now the Portland police seem to be targeting select areas in the city, like they target around Pioneer's Courthouse Square because businesses are complaining. But if you look at the panhandlers in the city of Portland, they're not aggressive. They're not rude. If they ask you for spare change, you say no. Most of them have a very polite attitude. Thank you very much. And as for the ACLU, that might be information that we want to get from you in case it's going down here, because that might be something we can take up to our area and get the ACLU involved up there, because people are being thrown in jail for panhandling. It's called a nuisance of the city, I think, is what the police like to use it. They're a nuisance to businesses. They're a nuisance to travelers. They're a nuisance to tourists. Anything that seems like disrupts their normal life, which a panhandler, I guess the police think disrupts their normal life, is a nuisance. And if you're a nuisance, the police want to throw you in jail. That's a best solution. So, I think getting information about what's going on down here with the ACLU that we can take back up there, gather all the information together, how people are being arrested, how they're being put in jail, what the charges are, and drag the ACLU up there, maybe get the laws changed up there like they are being down here.
Yeah.
And just a little on a lighter now. The Portland City Council has graciously started a program called Give Real Change, Not Spare Change. And it's just this silly idea that, what they want to do is just make it illegal to panhandle, but they want to do that, but instead they're just doing this public, they're spending our dollars educating the public that they shouldn't give money to people who are panhandling, and instead they're going to make it possible for you to donate to businesses. And I have no problem donating to nonprofits I have no problem saying give money to these organizations, but there are people who get Social Security monies, who get TANF monies, who get whatever, and they're the last nudge that they need to get month to month is the change they get from people on the street. And that is the facts. And so you can't, it's just such a discouraging thing to think that we have commissioners that I think they recognize that, but they're getting a lot of pressure from the business community because as Ella said, the notion is that everyone is out there tripping people and spitting on people and trying to take their money right out of their hand and stuff, and this is just obviously not true. That's all I wanted to say on that. I saw it back there,
and
talking about sharing homes before people's homes are foreclosed?
In some cases, yes, but also some of the properties that we can get families into it, so they can get back on their feet and get into an independent living situation.
Well, I guess I don't have enough knowledge because you would have to know about banking and everything else. I know that in some areas, homeless people have just simply moved into foreclosed homes, but I have to just give you a big I don't know on that, what all the issues are in terms of taking over foreclosed houses. I know nonprofits have talked about how they could do that. I lived in an area in Southern California where they took foreclosed houses and sold them to nonprofits for a dollar each. The city owned the homes. They sold them to the nonprofits to make shelters for battered women.
I have an idea, and it's kind of weird, but I think it might work, is you can offer the banks to open up their homes to caregivers who will maintain and support those houses, and they can write it off.
Well, I would just like to add one part to that. One is we need to think about the people whose houses are foreclosed. So there's a number of things that we need to do. I think that the good part of that I'm taking from your point is that we need people to do direct action now. We need those places where we can move people into direct action and really build a movement. You know, squatting is not a bad idea, but it has to be done within the context of a movement with the legal and all the people behind it. And then let me just add my final point, and that is most of those kinds of direct action really are going to help build the electoral power so that we can get people in elective office. So we can't ignore the need to be electorally involved. Even while we're planning direct action, we have to aim that direct action at the people who are elected to do the work that the people want. And when we get people like Peter Buckley in all those positions and Eric Navickas and others, we'll have a lot better opportunity to make the kind of change that we want.
Right on, Rich. What MLK was about, too.
I want to make a comment. Since I technically ended up on the streets in Portland in the middle of May of this year, first time ever in my life, the thing I see is shelters are great. We need them. But it seems like all the plans being devised is let's build more shelters. To me, shelters are not the answer. We need to build affordable housing. We need to make subsidized apartments for people. There's no job trainings for people that come out of prison. They have no job skills. We need to incorporate job training in these programs. We need to, there's a lot. The unseen homeless to me are the youth and the elderly. The youth, they're there because they came from abusive homes. They told their parents they had HIV. They had a drug problem or whatever. And it seems like they're the forgotten people of the homeless that's overlooked. And we need to come up with, there needs to be plans if we're going to deal with the homeless issue efficiently and effectively. We need to incorporate so many facets into it, not just shelter. Shelters get people off the street. Give them shelter, what it says. Ways to get them into transitional into housing, permanent stable housing, subsidized housing, ways to get their Social Security, ways to give kids a way to get their education, GEDs or whatever. And it seems like that's the stuff that I'm hearing in Portland that I think is a major flaw in the system. So.
And I just wanted to say real quick, twice. The banks get paid twice on those foreclosed houses. They get paid through our tax dollars in this TARP bailout that happened, and then they get paid again when they resell the house when it recoups its value. So take over the houses, folks. They're going to get paid anyways, one way or the other.
Can I put one more thing in here? That
sure.
To me it's important because I remember the last depression. And you know what they did? The government, because there was such an uproar and they couldn't do a damn thing about it. What they did was they had the CCC camps, and they refurbished them, and the Forest Service started before. They didn't do a damn thing for the Forest Service. But they put those men to work, they trained them, it took other people to do the office work and the whole thing, and it pulled us out of the depression. Besides getting bombed.
I think we have time for one more question, and then we're going to just take a quick break. And so, let's see. I want to do eeny, meeny, miny, mo. I saw Delbert.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Hey, my name is Delbert, and I'm from Portland. I'm just curious, what are we going to do after this San Francisco trip? Because the issue is from, I don't know if anybody's familiar with Portland, but within like a 10-block radius from another 10-block radius, there is 16 abandoned buildings that's been abandoned for like 10 to 12 years. So what are our issues that we're going to do after we get done with San Francisco on trying to get housing in that?
We're going to organize.
Well, one plan that we're going to do is, I mean, this is one problem I saw with Kay, is we take on too many issues at one time instead of concentrating on one issue at a time. Our main issue when we get back is going to be the camping ordinance. Getting the camping ordinance repealed or a compromise with the city that works beneficial to everybody. That is our main focus. Instead of taking this issue, this issue, this issue, and trying to take three of them at one time, for example, we concentrate all our energy into one issue, and hopefully we'll have the get in your face attitude. I mean, we're going to take it City Hall. We're going to take it, you know, the mayor, we're gonna do our ordinance tickets that we talked about. It's just that it got pushed back to the strip. But I mean, hopefully people are gonna be passionate enough like I'm getting that, you know, get in their face. You know, you're not gonna shut the door on the faces. We vote. And people, the city officials seem to think homeless people don't vote. Homeless people vote in big numbers. And it's like if the city knows we're serious, and it's not a case of requesting, we have to get up there and demand the city do these things for us. Not, oh, would you please repeal the camping ban? No, we need to get in there and push doors open and stand in people's face, jump on their desks, and say, we want things where people can camp legally.
I know there's a lot of people with their hands up. How does the group feel? I mean, what should we do here? I mean, we've been doing this for an hour. I was wondering, should we just call it at this, and then we can take a small break, drain our main veins, and get a and just
wow.
Take a quick 10-minute break, and then come back with some music.
Wow!
Thank you very much. I can take questions from individuals. I was came to.
Hit the record button this time.